Doc wondered, how could he be fighting against a howling wind that was blowing his family in the opposite direction? Many things in nature had changed since Skydark, but not something as fundamental as this. Mildred shook her head, her beaded plaits swaying about her shoulders.
No way. It just can't be.
You know something, Mildred? If you were sitting here right now, where I am, you wouldn't be in the slightest surprised by what you're doing.
Come on. You're not telling me that I haven't got a valid point. More than anyone else you have sitting here, I know that an initial diagnosis can be misleading.
Listen to yourself, Mildred. It's typical denial. We've run a full series of tests. You have a cyst. It's not major, and it can easily be removed.
Mildred sat back and looked out of the window at the freeway beyond the hospital entrance. All of a sudden, she felt so lonely. Everyone out there seemed so carefree, so untroubled by an invasion of possibly hostile cells within their own body.
Mildred?
Huh?
She turned back to the doctor opposite her. Strange, but he seemed to know her well, judging by his attitude. Yet she couldn't remember ever seeing him before.
I'm sorry. I was just...
He nodded in a typically medical manner. So understanding, yet also so impersonal.
Don't worry about it, Mildred. It won't be a difficult procedure. In fact, we could do it right now.
Before Mildred had a chance to react, he pressed a buzzer on his desk, and the oak double doors behind her swung open. She spun in her chair to see, with some shock, a fully operational surgery in the room she was sure had been a reception area when she came in?
Wait a second here. Don't rush me on this.
She stopped dead. The doctor was dressed in a surgeon's gown, but instead of a surgical mask and cap, he was wearing a Ku Klux Klan hood.
You're not getting your hands on me, motherfucker!
She sprang to her feet, but any attempts to escape were stalled by the iron grip of two men who appeared behind her, seemingly from nowhere, to grasp her firmly by the arms. Glancing over her shoulder, she could see that both men also wore surgical gowns and Klan hoods.
What the fuck?
We're simply going to remove your cyst, Mildred. But as you may have a reaction to the anesthetic, we're going to dispense with it.
Mildred felt a cold sweat break out down her spine. They were going to operate without an anesthetic. For the fun of it. The shock would probably kill her. The two men dragged her into the operating room and pulled her onto the operating table. Not for one second did they release their grip. Mildred tried to struggle as she was hauled across the table, but to no avail. They remained completely implacable.
You bastards!
When she was on the table, one of them took full control of her, holding her down with incredible strength, while the other secured her hands and feet with restraining straps. She kicked out at him, catching him under the chin and snapping his head back with a force that should have rendered him unconscious. He didn't even pause in his actions.
Ain't that a bitch?
With the black woman secured on the table, the doctor walked into the operating room with an almost obscenely casual air. He was carrying a tar and gas torch. She could tell by the mixed odor in the otherwise sterile atmosphere. The sweat gathered in a tiny pool at the small of her back. The smell of the torch reminded her of her father, and the way he burned inside his church. She could imagine him, praying for his soul as the Klansmen gathered outside, watching the building burn. She could imagine his prayers, desperate for his own life, but still pleading for forgiveness against the scum who were killing him slowly and painfully. With a flick of an expensive gold lighter, the doctor lit the torch. The heat was noticeable even from several yards.
If we're not going to use an anesthetic, least we can do is cauterize the wound.
One of the others picked up a scalpel and advanced toward her. He ripped off her clothes and poised the scalpel, which caught the light of the torch and flickered over her. Mildred, knowing she was completely powerless and doomed, gave in to her frustration and fear.
I think she's about ready. Go and tell the Gen.
The guard nodded at the tech and turned to leave the room. When he reached the door, it was opened by Murphy.
Sir, the woman has reached a state of readiness. I was just about to report to the Gen, sir.
Good. The old man and the boy are still alive, and now she's ready. The muty albino outsider seems impervious, but I guess no process is foolproof.
The tech, feeling that the R&D department was once again being impugned by the army, was about to say something when a warning glance from the guard silenced him. The hell with it. Let the army thugs think what they liked. The outsider's resistance to interrogation had been reduced to virtually zero in a fraction of the time their heavy-handed methods would take. Murphy and the guard left.
Army bastard.
Ryan was back in Front Royal, and all hell was about to break loose. The one-eyed man was in a gaudy house, even more run down than those he usually encountered on the trek across the Deathlands. The old stone walls were scarred and pitted with the marks of 100 bottles, 1,000 fights. Dried blood stained patches of old plaster that the gaudy proprietor hadn't bothered to clean. Perhaps he figured that the marks would serve as a deterrent to anyone fool enough to start another brawl. Yes, he was going to be wrong. The almost deserted reception area, where an ugly and multi-scarred barkeep served drinks to waiting customers, was occupied by three bored-looking sluts of indeterminate age and two drunken men who looked far past the point where they would be able to perform. And then there was Ryan. Try as he might, the one-eyed man couldn't recall exactly how he had reached this place. Through a vague fog of memory, he could remember the redoubt, the escape, and the strange machine firing trank darts. And then? This? He looked at the glass in his hand, filled with a spirit that tasted as foul as the glass looked.
How many of these have I had?
Hey, you! One eye!
Ryan tried to ignore him. No point looking for trouble. It was obviously looking for him.
Shit, the fucker's deaf as well as half blind.
The one-eyed man turned to face them, taking them in. The one who started the exchange was tall and skinny, no more than 140 pounds and over 6 feet tall. He had long, loose, lean limbs, his arms dangling at his sides as he swayed gently in a drunken haze with an idiot grin on his face. An old steel bayonet, rusted but still lethal, hung from his belt. His eyes held a mean gleam. His companion was about 6 inches shorter and 50 pounds heavier, all of it muscle. He had a homemade knife in his belt, jagged metal attached to a wooden handle with wire. It looked more like a tool than a weapon, but still lethal. Like the taller man, he was dressed in cut-off jeans that were stiff with oil, dirt, and sweat. Both wore heavy combat boots that, perversely, seemed to be immaculately maintained. The men were naked from the waist up, which only served to draw Ryan's attention to the blaster that hung off the squat drunk's shoulder. It was a Heckler & Koch G-12 caseless rifle, like the one that had served Ryan well for more years than he cared to remember. So they were armed, and they outnumbered him 2-1. But he was sober and had more weapons. Unconsciously, his hand traveled to where his ponga was sheathed.
What?
A tremor of surprise shot through him when he realized it wasn't there. Neither, now that he came to consider it, could he feel the comfortable weight of the Sig Sauer or Steyr SSG-70.
Shit.
So they outnumbered him, and he was unarmed. The odds had shifted. Ryan felt a charge go through his body as his adrenaline level rose, and he shifted gears to adjust to the situation. The bartender leaned across to him.
You pay for any damage caused if you live, fucker. Just like those scum pay if they live. House rules.
Seems fair. At least it's not 3-1.
Hey, I think One Eye wants to fight. Maybe he can only see one of us because he's only got one eye.
The interior of the Gaudy was lit by a series of naked torches that hung from the walls. One of them was behind the bar, about halfway between Ryan and the drunks. The one-eyed man sprang onto the rickety wooden board that served as a bar, his balance delicately poised as the groaning wood swayed beneath his weight. He reached across the head of the startled barkeep and grabbed the torch. The two drunks were also baffled by this seemingly pointless move. Their surprise and the alcohol haze conspired to delay their reactions for just the necessary fraction of a second. If they had been sober, it would have been a close shave for Ryan.
All right, one eye.
The skinny drunk drew the bayonet and threw it at Ryan. The bayonet whistled past Ryan's ear.
Shit!
It nicked the skin and drew blood. The one-eyed warrior shifted his balance to pitch the torch seemingly into the middle of the floor. The squat drunk was too busy unshouldering the heckler and coke to notice where the torch landed. The filthy floor had a line of damp leading a trail of spat alcohol, ending at a midpoint between the two drunks and where Ryan had initially been standing. The torch landed at that midpoint, the raw sugarcane alcohol igniting as the flames touched the dirt. A tongue of blue flame shot along the floor and up the leg of the squat drunk. He'd drunk so much of the raw spirit that he didn't at first feel the pain as the flames scorched his skin and ignited on the old stained denim. He swung the rifle around to sight on Ryan, drawing on the trigger before the intense heat and pain penetrated his fogged consciousness, roasting his balls.
Wow!
He moved back, trying to step away from the flames, beat at his burning crotch, and fire at the one-eyed warrior, all at the same time.
Motherfucker!
Bullets sprayed into the ceiling, bringing down plaster, wood chippings, and dust. The three sluts, who'd been watching with mild disinterest, now disappeared faster than a rat down a hole. The scrawny drunk had his attention distracted and half turned to his friend. Ryan didn't let anything deter him from his only course of action. He launched himself from the bar and crashed into the thin drunk, taking him down. A battered plastic chair took the brunt of the impact, and Ryan felt the crack of the drunk's elbow as it shattered on the metal frame of the chair. Bones didn't usually break that easily, and Ryan rode his luck by following up while the drunk was disoriented and distracted by the pain. With the heel of his hand, he forced the man's chin back. With his free hand, Ryan chopped at the man's exposed Adam's apple. The drunk choked and coughed blood. He was limp with shock. It took Ryan just one twist to break the man's neck.
What?
Ryan rolled to one side to see the drunk coming toward him, holding the handmade knife.
Come here, you bastard!
His legs were blistered and charred, and the denim appeared burned into his skin, but above the waist he seemed to have escaped damage from the fire. The rifle lay across the room, discarded in drunken anger. Good. Ryan stayed calm, despite the adrenaline race of his pulse.
Who, me?
The angrier an opponent, the likelier he was to make mistakes. Like lunging at a man and committing his strength and balance to one direction when his foe was moving in another.
God damn it!
The squat drunk threw himself toward Ryan, who moved back across the slumped corpse of the skinny drunk. His muscle-bound opponent wasn't expecting Ryan to head in that direction, so the knife hit empty dirt, sticking in the floor. Momentarily confused, the squat drunk was torn between going after Ryan and retrieving his sole weapon. It was a mistake. Ryan sprang to his feet. The drunk turned his head to see where his opponent was, just in time to receive the toe of Ryan's combat boot at the point of his jaw. The bone shattered like delicate porcelain china, splintering in the drunk's face. Just before the drunk hit the floor for the last time, Ryan stepped back and turned, expecting to see the barkeep ready to argue about the damages. Instead, he was greeted with a sight that made his senses reel. Harvey, his dead brother, the cause of so much trouble in Front Royal, and the reason Ryan had been forced to leave the Ville, stood behind the bar, flanked by Secmen.
Congratulations, Ryan. Now see what you can do against my boys.
Wallace and Murphy had left Dean, now disconnected from the comp, and stood over his father, watching the signs on the monitor.
He's ready.
J.B. had the worst nightmare of his life come true. The armorer was defenseless against a horde of stickies. All his weapons jammed. All his friends had refused to go off. His fedora was lost, as was his mini-sextant. But most importantly of all, his spectacles had been knocked off at some point that he couldn't quite recall. So he was fumbling in a blurry mist.
Damn!
He never lost his spectacles. It was something he went out of his way to avoid, and he couldn't understand where or how they had gone missing. All he knew was that the Uzi had jammed as soon as he squeezed the trigger, the M4000 scattergun had no cartridges, and his capacious pockets were suddenly, mysteriously empty, except for grenades that failed to detonate. His knife was stuck in the body of the only sticky he had so far managed to chill. Stuck so hard that he couldn't move it, and couldn't waste time devoting his full attention to it as the horde of muties overran him. JB couldn't even see where he was as they pinned him to the ground. He could smell their foul odor and feel the heat of their bodies as a multitude of suckered fingers grasped his body, wriggling obscenely across him as he was secured in a tight mass grip and lifted from the ground. He felt the quality of the air change as he was lifted above their heads and carried along. The light increased, and he guessed that he had been sheltered somewhere, but was now out in the open. The landscape blurred as he was jarred up and down on the uneven ground. He could hear the debased chattering of the stickies as they moved en masse. He struggled, even though he knew it was pointless. There were too many of them. Their grip was too tight, and he was severely impaired by the loss of his glasses. Despite this, his acute sense of survival impelled him to try. A slim-to-nothing chance was preferable to no chance at all. As JB flexed his muscles, some of the stickies stumbled beneath him. One caught a foot on a stone and lost balance, careering into others who lost their balance. Among the unintelligent creatures, this caused a mass panic, and JB was pitched forward into their midst. He landed on his feet and hit the ground running.